Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and Paradigm Shifters are our people who are making a difference in our consciousness in the collective of humanity during this time of the Great Shift. And our Paradigm Shifter tonight is going to take you on a wild ride, whether you're on the planet or off, and through some ancient traditions and some modern ways of reflecting those traditions. And well, I'll let him tell you. It's Joseph Mark Cohen from Nelson, B.C., and he's the author of this amazing collection of cards called Crop Circle Oracle Cards, and the instigator, owner, manager of Tree of Life School. Is that right?
Yes, treeoflifeschool.com is the website if people want to go.
Okay, so welcome to Paradigm Shifters. Welcome from Canada.
Hey, my pleasure, Veronica.
Yeah. So you've got quite an assortment. These are beautiful cards, incidentally. I am absolutely blown away by them. And for people at home, you might want to get yourself some of these cards. But each card shows a crop circle. And I guess you've gathered these from all over the world, have you?
Well, they're primarily, I'd say they're 99% the British crop circles. And I have my friend in Britain, Steve Alexander, to thank for most of the photos. There's a few others that are contributed by other photographers. So they're all done by a professional photographer who's very gifted, who loves the land and takes beautiful shots. Now, of course, it's a deck, so many of them are close-ups and you're just seeing the circle, but I included many of the landscape shots where you see the crop circle in its setting.
These are really, really beautiful. I'm serious. Each one of them looks like a work of art. Of course, they are, aren't they?
They are.
So where do you think crop circles come from?
Well, you know, that's kind of the big question. And I believe that I'd call it interdimensional beings. Mm-hmm. It's a language. It's a language that appeals to all traditions. It doesn't matter whether you're a Mayan, a Hebrew, a Taoist, a pagan, a Wiccan, whatever. This language of sacred geometry is a language that, you know, appears as pictogram, sonogram, code. There's mathematical codes embedded in them. You know, if I had to put my, you know, make a bet on it, I do think that they're inspired by sixth, seventh dimensional Arcturian energies.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the Pleiadian fourth, fifth dimensionals are helping out with the, how shall we say it, the downloading of the image onto the earth, working with the elementals.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the legend and lore about the Pleiadians is that they seeded,
humanity.
A lot of cultures on Turtle Island. Pleiadian, Mayan, and Hopi all have Pleiadian connection.
Hmm.
Arcturian, actually, people don't really want to say, but it seems that the Taoist and Chinese culture have a connection to Arcturus.
That's interesting.
Buddhist quality of collective consciousness and working with a group soul matrix.
Well, tell me this, like, who are you? First of all, are you an intuitive? And who are any of us? But and you have a long history of studying Kabbalah, right?
Well, I had an advantage this lifetime in that I learned Hebrew at about from the ages of 5 to 13, and Hebrew is a remarkable language that has a coding to it. So in terms of the crop circles, I used my understanding of gematria, which is number mysticism, and sacred geometry, which can extend in, you know, beyond third dimension.
You learned that by studying Hebrew?
Yes.
Wow.
And also I learned an immense amount about the power of sound through Hebrew prayer and chanting. So, you know, by the age of 13, I kind of had quite a nice little mystical childhood background and a love of nature. I actually grew up, was in Niagara Falls, Ontario, and I used to spend a lot of time by the waterfall and, you know, go to some beautiful orchards and that sort of thing. So I have kind of like a twin inheritance, one on the, you know, the, I guess the high mental conceptual, but then I love the earth.
Mm.
So you can see that how those two would draw me to the crop circles. And I have a theory right now, and, you know, it might, you know, it's speculative.
Theories are good.
Yeah, that Pythagoras, who I was told I was a student of, was actually inspired by the Hebrew Kabbalah that he learned in Alexandria and then brought back to Greece. And it kind of looks like Pythagoras, in terms of his working with sound healing, you know, many channels believe that Pythagoras is now the one called Kuthumi, and is responsible for bringing in this, the music of the spheres and the language of light, and bringing in the new healing with sound and light to our planet. So you can see that there's a, there's kind of a triangle here between Kabbalah, the Arcturians, the Elohim, Pythagoras as an inlet point. So Kabbalah has been secreted away and kind of kept in the Hebrew tradition, which I follow in my way. However, it is a universal language. There was a crystal teacher I worked with for a period of time, Frank Alper, wrote books called Exploring Atlantis. And he developed a whole language of, you know, chanting, which he said was an Atlantean tonal language. Well, it sounds pretty much like Hebrew chanting. So, a little further, there's a man who started a language school. Most people know him. His name was Charles Berlitz, Berlitz Language School. And he was a wonderful entomologist and studied many languages. And as it turns out, there are many languages that have parallels to Hebrew. Mayan, a little bit of the Hopi, Lakota Sioux. So many of the native tribes on Turtle Island, North and South America, have language stems that parallel what you'd find in Basque or Iberia and in Hebrew. So there's likely that there was a very primordial Atlantean language of ceremony, prayer, and interdimensional contact. And so I don't think you'll find too many rabbis talking about this because it's been very held within an ethnicity web. But this is what I've come to feel from my kind of Kabbalistic roots within Judaism, but then a lot of anthropological study.
Well, that's really interesting, actually. So let's jump back to the question about the crop circles, which you're talking about as being communications. So that sort of ties in to what you're saying about the etymology or the roots of language, right?
Right. It's a communication primarily, I think, with an aspect of the right hemisphere of the brain. And we're part of this whole deal with the shift, as it's called, is that we've been living in an overly left brain culture, and we're moving into like a visionary sacred geometry intuitive gestalt that isn't in sequential time, it's in cyclical resonance perception time. So the crop circles fit the bill for that,
because that's why they're all circles. Or they're not all circles, in fact, are they?
Well, they're not, but they're, you know, they started out, many of them, circles, and usually they're formed with, how should we say it, clockwise and counterclockwise spiraling. And there's a whole language within the crop circles of what I would call zero-point energy. So, you know, there's many, much speculation, but it seems that the crop circles are one part of raising the vibration of the earth through a form of interdimensional acupuncture at sacred sites in Britain.
And so you see, the acupuncture is on the earth, or is it also affecting us by looking at it, you know?
Both. Both, because our, you know, these are codes of creation. So when we look at a code of creation, a beautiful mandala, sacred geometry, there's something in us that remembers that, because it's embedded in us. It's in, you know, the cells of our body, our blood. It's just part of the web, you know. And if you were, say you were reading a Christian text and you read, "In the beginning was the Word," well, really the translation of that would have been, "In the beginning was vibration." Mm-hmm. So the crop circles are vibratory codes, and there is even a sonic, quite a high-pitched sound. Those people that have had the experience of being nearby when a crop circle was created, usually in the middle of the night, they're going to hear very, very high-pitched sound.
Oh, how interesting. Yeah. So also, by looking at these cards, I realize that some people will go and lay in them because there's a, I'm trying to think of the one, it was the one with the big, like a partial spiral.
Yeah, it's basically a Fibonacci spiral. I think that's card 35, and that's one that Patricia Nori, Corey, got an extraordinary download and a connection to a consciousness from Sirius in that one. It was one that was a very highly initiatic one, and I think something like 15,000 people were in that one.
So are they what do you know about that? Are they created for that? Should we be going to try to place ourselves in them? Is there a really empowering, is that what their communication is?
Yes, and we should do that with respect and decorum and ceremony. So there's a number of people that are in the crop circle community that are fascinated, like myself. And it's kind of like we go back every summer, and every summer, and I've gone about 7 or 8 times now, and I'll always be in 4 or 5, and I still remember to this day certain experiences in certain circles.
So are they coming all that regularly so that you know in the summertime you will go and see some crop circles?
Oh, yeah. In Britain, the season will begin. It depends a little bit on weather, and we've got very extraordinary weather anomalies now.
We sure do. It's wet over here.
And with one year where there was, I think, not enough rain, so there wasn't enough rain under the earth. The fields in Britain are a palette, and the weather impacts that. And some years, I think it was 2 years ago, there was a crop circle in corn in September. Most of the time, it'll begin in early May. And by the time the fields are beginning to be harvested, it'll be like mid to late August.
Hmm.
And that's the season in Britain. There are many crop circles in Europe. There were quite a few in Italy last year as well.
So do you take people, I know you take people on tours. Do you take people on tours of crop circles?
Yes, I do.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'll be doing one this year from, about July 24th to August 8th. And within that, I'll be going to a conference where there'll be speakers for 3 days, and we'll get into, I'd like to get people into at least 6 or 7 crop circles in the time of the tour. But it's not the only thing I do in Britain, because I love Glastonbury, so I do a little retreat in Glastonbury, and we'll go to the Tor and Chalice Well, and then I'm also quite in love with Cornwall, so we'll take people down to Tintagel, where Merlin was, and we'll have our own little round table, and we'll go to as many stone circles and beautiful earth energy places in Britain as crop circles. But the crop circles, up until last year, were primarily in Wiltshire, between Avebury, Stonehenge, and Alton Barnes and a place called Pusey Vale.
I had absolutely no idea that you could plan a tour around their experience. I thought it was much more random than that, or much less frequent.
Well, if it's a 2-week tour, there might be 3 or 4 circles that are going to come down within that period of two or three weeks.
Well, Joseph, Mark, are they I guess I don't really know how to ask the question. Are they proliferating? Are they getting to be more and more as the shift goes on, or
as we
gear up to 2012?
I wouldn't say that, but Britain traditionally has between 50 and 75 or 80 in a season. And I will say, there's one little caveat here. I think about 10, maybe up to 10% in a year are creations by humans who love sacred geometry in Britain and have figured out how to use lasers and imprinting and have been able to do some small ones here and there.
Really? Do you know that for sure?
Well, partially sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges is, anybody that goes into a circle, you can feel it. Like if you go into a circle that's been created by a plasma beam, there's a very, very high energy, and you feel like you're walking into a fifth-dimensional, mm-hmm. joyful, powerful, imprinting energy field.
And the plasma beam is what comes from the higher dimensions?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you feel that difference, whereas if it were done, you know, by... I'm not talking about, you know, the British disinformation thing that basically marginalized the crop circles so that most people on the planet think that they were done by, you know, a couple guys with boards. I mean, it's just not the case.
The scissors in the dead of night.
Yeah, but, you know, there's been, I know, two times where they've been seen appearing or within 5 or 7 minutes of an airplane going over a field and then coming back, the whole formation's there.
Oh, my.
So, but there's been a few smaller ones. I even included one or two in the deck, which I thought might not have been made by the Arcturians. But, you know, that's, I'll have a contest on that.
Well, it's really interesting to me. I'm still kind of flummoxed thinking... I thought that they were a number. I thought they were growing in number. That there used to be very few. And what you're getting
me
to realize,
growing a little bit more worldwide now. In Britain, it's pretty stable, the number in the summer, and every season has a different theme, mm-hmm. geometrically. Like last summer there were a lot of like Rubik's cubes and hexagonals and 3Ds, and they're fascinating.
So what is the communication, if they are communication? What is being taught to us? What is being, or is it to teach us? Is it to awaken us?
There's many sub-themes. One of them is it's like a course in higher geometry mathematics, you know, Tibetan meditators would have done it, you know, in terms of yantras and visualization, to just open us up to higher dimensional grid work, if you could call it that. And there's a whole theme that's around the Mayan calendar in 2012.
And that's some specific crop circles that have that as a theme?
Yeah, there was one, you've got a deck there in number 29, it came down on the 7th of August, 2007.
Okay.
So it's called the 777 circle. Now, from my understanding, in Hebrew, there's a Hebrew phrase, and this is, it's called Sha'ar HaKochav, which means the stargate. So, and seven is the mystical number, so I thought, so there were people there at the best palette, which is Alton Barnes, waiting for that 777 to come down.
And they knew it was coming.
They knew it was coming, and there was a man up there with an infrared camera, and he caught about 7 minutes of light, or, you know, balls dancing on the earth in the middle of the night between 3:14 and 3:21.
So you mean these people intuit that something's happening, and then they perch on the rocks waiting? And
yep, and then they found it in the morning. It was one of the largest ever, and it was looked to some people like an ohm from an airplane view. But there's a man I know, and I can't name him. He's a practicing code breaker, and he basically said that crop circle showed 2.5 months of time, and it pointed to the next Sun-Venus conjunction, which was later on that summer, as a key date. Now, the whole Mayan calendar is based on cycles of Venus.
It is?
Oh, yeah. It's mm-hmm. based on the cycles of Venus, which makes a five-pointed star, and it's based on Carl Johan Kalaman is very on about the passage of Venus across the face of the sun. So people did ceremony in June of 2004. It's an 8-year cycle. It happens again, I think, June 6th, 2012. And that will be an extraordinary day to be out in the fields for crop circles. So there's sub-themes that take in the prophecies around consciousness shifting and time calibration from different cultures, but the Mayan calendar stuff's there.
And what do you think the shift means? And do these crop circles express what the shift means?
Well, they would help trigger a perception within the soul and within the consciousness and within the hearts of a human around it, because they would give you a taste, a foretaste, an appetizer of that energy. So, you know, fifth-dimensional energy was kind of speculative to me. I mean, I've had a few mystical experiences in my life for sure and been in altered states of consciousness, but the joy and the equanimity and the feeling of harmony between human and the whole of Gaia or Adama, the earth energy, and the tremendous exuberance and joy, and even the feeling of wanting to play or being in a musical structure is also there. Because sacred geometry yields music in architectural forms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say, for instance, you came with me on a trip to Egypt, and I do have one planned for next November for the 11-11-11, right?
Okay.
And I've been to Egypt. It might actually be my 11th trip. I have to count them up one day.
Yeah.
But in Egypt, I will take people to Abydos, which was an Osiris temple.
Mm-hmm.
And in Abydos, there's a series of seven little chambers there. And I think the very first time I went to Egypt, I was with a friend of mine who was a very gifted musician, recording artist. And we did sonic testing in these little chambers. Well, the chambers hold a volume based on sacred geometry, and then every chamber had a different resonant note in space. I mean, if we vocalized it, we could find it, but somehow or other being in those chambers was basically giving one an extraordinary auric healing or a tune-up, chakra by chakra or sphere by sphere, and I certainly had pretty much a full-on kundalini activation after being in Abydos. And then the King's Chamber, so-called King's Chamber, really should have been called the Chamber of the Resurrection. It's a whole other thing based on sound, based on middle C, 256 cycles per second. And you make tones in the King's Chamber, and it feels like there's a chorus of angels bringing those sounds right back through you.
Wow.
So it used to be that temple structures were created through the wisdom of mathematics and music in relationship to the ley lines and the energy currents of the earth on the earth grid. Were, you know, sacred site travel guides like myself were fascinated by this. And we're just going and taking little tests of temples, mostly that have been destroyed or shaken by an earthquake or something like that.
Well, do you find, okay, I'm just going to hook up both things here. Do you find that the resonance in some of the crop circles is akin to the resonance in the pyramids?
It's a totally different phenomenon, but it is linked. It's, you know, because you're in a crop circle, you are earth listening, like you're listening to a frequency with your energy body.
Mm.
In a temple, you have the opportunity to use your voice and make a sound and then get the resonance back because you're in a held chamber. Shamans have been doing it for years in caves, places where you have a, not necessarily an echo, but a volume of space. In the crop circles, the whole atmosphere is your volume of space, but your ears might pop. You might hear particular tones. Something will happen, balancing or actually potentially disbalancing you if you're in a, you know, if you need an upgrade between the hemispheres of your brain. And you will feel that shifting going on. You know, there's a lot of little shifts before you get to a big shift, I assure you.
but
there's been spontaneous healings in crop circles. People have had migraines and gone in and come out, you know, migraine-free.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of people that have been absolutely perplexed that their digital technology, their cameras, their photographs, their sonic equipment just wouldn't work in a crop circle because there's a leftover electromagnetic energy.
Let's go back to the Arcturians. You don't think that they're actually you said that they're activating our universal wisdom in ourselves, but they're not actually giving us instructions about what to do for the shift or for 2012.
No, I don't think, you know, that has to come from within, from our soul wisdom and what we carry within us. So, you know, it's a particular way of educating, and it's a wise way. You know, we've been force-feeding information to children in school systems for years, basically turning them off from wanting to learn. But the way to do it is to give a human being an appetizer, a taste,
mm-hmm.
you know, a taste of an energy that where that grows within our curiosity, our intuition, our heart love, so that we want to find out more. So that's kind of the way the crop circles are working. And, you know, I'm surprised that so few people have been touched by this phenomenon, because it's such a beautiful experience. And it's just unfortunate. It's been so marginalized by the media and left out of reportage. And yet, you know, there are websites and there's photographs, and I guess there's a whole subculture now of people that really, you know, are totally fascinated and moved by them too.
Yeah, we had a wonderful DVD here for a while. I don't know where it is right now, but it was amazing. We took it to everybody that we thought would be interested. But that whole thing about them being created by people on the planet, that's what is used all the time to debunk it, isn't it?
Well, that's what's used now, yeah. And yet, when I was in Britain last year, there was a man I knew, a very sweet man, acupuncturist, dowser, and he said he was invited by a group to come be part of creating one last year. Now, I heard that they never did get back to him, so I think there's lots more rumors of humans creating than there actually are. But he did tell me that he'd heard that sometimes they'll go out with a plan after meditating on a geometrical form, and they'll get some assistance from the other side. Or
so they kind of channel the cutting, sort of.
Yeah, they channel the form, and it's not cutting; it's just impressing. So,
and are you a channel, Joseph Mark?
Well, yes, I am, but not in not in the way of saying, you know, this is DK speaking, or this is Kutumi, or this is Mary Magdalene. I wouldn't do that. You know, Frank Alper was one of my favorites, and he said he just channeled his higher self. So, and if I'm, you know, and I'm not a channel with one spirit guide that is my constant companion, you know, it's like, you know, on any one day I could feel the presence of, you know, Rumi or William Blake or a rabbi who wrote Kabbalistic manuscripts or a mathematician. You know, it's like if you have an aspect of your soul open and you have a love of certain beings, then you are a channel of that energy.
Well, so let's go back into the crop circles then. And when people are evoking their universal knowing, they must become kind of channels for that very thing. They must be able to open to much higher guidance as a result, right?
I agree with that.
So then as you do all this...
And many of the people that are drawn to the crop circles, probably if you look at their background, they have their architects, they have a love of sacred geometry, they have a love of music, they have a love, there's something that is drawing them to this, to the circles.
And also, when I'm looking through your cards, there aren't any old pictures. How old are the oldest ones that you know about?
Well, they really started to be documented shortly after 1987. I think there's an 87 one or
after the harmonic convergence.
Yes, so I think that was J.J. Hurtak's idea, or that there was going to be a series of, I don't even think he called them crop circles, from about 87.
Oh, so he said that that was going to happen.
Yeah, to 2012.
For people who don't know, he's the fellow who brought through the Keys of Enoch.
That's right. And I have many friends in Sedona that have worked with her TAC. You know, so that period of time, just to, you know, give a little heads up on 2012, is the last 25.6 years, which you could call 26 years, mm-hmm. of the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So those, you know, within the last 26 years of a big, well, some people would say 5,200-year cycle, mm-hmm. or 26,000-year cycle. Because the Mayan calendar, I believe it's 5,125-year segments, but others say 5,200, because 52 is an important one. You'd have to meditate on card 52, which is called the time tunnel, to connect more with that, but...
My problem is I don't have my cards in sequence, so I'm rummaging through trying to catch them.
Well, I thought what it might be fun to do, and we need about maybe 5 minutes, is I'll give you a reading so that the people can listen to some of the oracles. And
oh, that would be wonderful.
You know, so. Mm-hmm. But anyways, these last 26 years represent 26,000 years of time.
Mm.
And that's why, you know, one can say that time is speeding up, because karmically we have to gather the fruits of a big evolutionary journey into a lovely little fruit buffet that can give us the superfoods for the next cycle.
Well, and the superfoods for the next cycle are going to be our evoked or awakened consciousness, are they not?
Yes, and there are certain, you know, purifications and initiations that a human needs to go through to get to that level of perception.
Okay, so I just want to ask this, that if this is so, which makes utter sense to me, that what's perplexing is to think that, for example, Great Britain has the concentration of these. Is that, are they the nucleus of the family of man, or what on earth?
I wouldn't go that far. What I would say is that it's highly likely that Wiltshire and the British Isles have... they're ancient. They take you back to megalithic cultures, and probably there's a resonance there with Hyperborean Atlantis. And my personal metaphorical notion is that an aspect around Wiltshire is like the ear, and that the energies there in Stonehenge, Avebury, different mounds, the St. Michael's line,
mm-hmm.
and my friend John Michel explained... delved into this all his life, connect through to the Great Pyramid in Jerusalem and the whole Earth grid. So if you're putting an energy through Silbury Hill, which is where some of the most beautiful crop circles
appear. Isn't that where the big white horse is?
No, that would be, I think you're probably looking at Uffington Horse, or maybe the one at Sher Hill. So there's 9 of those white horses in chalk. But no, Silbury Hill's like a mound.
Hmm.
And it looks sort of like a mountain, small one. And it is made of chalk, actually, I think. And so my belief is that when a crop circle comes down there, it's for the whole Earth grid.
Hmm.
It's a sensitive zone, but the energy gets distributed out through the whole planet.
Hmm. Oh, I see. So I see. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other thing is that the energies are moving faster and faster, getting higher and higher frequency on the planet and out through the solar system and through the universe, are they not?
Yes, that's true.
And is that a lot to do with why they're coming forward now to wake us up so we can unfold with these moving energies?
Yeah, there's a few things involved in this. One, in a certain sense, the planet's coming out of a quarantine zone,
mm-hmm.
like we've been in a... You know, the energy sunk quite severely after the so-called sinking of Atlantis, which may have been a big tectonic plate reversal. There's even some things about Atlantis in the crop circles that I found. And
you mean symbols and so on?
Yeah. Even, you know, what looked to be, there was one glyph once, I didn't put it in my deck, that looked like it was an Atlantean script language. It's fascinating. So, there's that, and there's obviously we have to burn off a lot of karma. So depending on how we collectively respond to the frequencies, you know, there's some people on coast to coast, and it was last night talking about, you know, how, you know, the ships are all waiting in the next dimension to come down and lift us off for the ascension, this and that. I don't necessarily believe that, that's maybe one potential scenario. And then you've got Hollywood movies looking at all the potential for destruction. But I kind of don't even think, you know, there was a scripture that said not even the angels in heaven know exactly when or how this is going to happen. So we're getting closer. We're getting intuitions. We're getting potential scripts, potential scenarios, mock-ups. But, you know, consciousness is shifting quite dramatically. What happens with planetary economics right now is part of it. Mm-hmm. How humans wake up to be compassionate to one another is part of it. You know, how we take in the energies and the frequencies and we use them creatively to get off of our enfossilizing fossil economy with oil and begin to work with zero-point energies.
And can you explain briefly what zero-point energy is?
Because
a lot of people listening don't know.
Well, zero-point energy is an energy that is a free energy that becomes available when you contact the emptiness or the wormhole at the core of just about every atom. So Nassim Haramein has a way of explaining it that's quite good and logical. But the idea is that physicists, you know, we had this whole notion that, you know, we're living in an entropic universe. We're not. We're, you know, at the core of every atom, at the core of every circle, every galaxy, there is like a natural spring, which is the energy that is the creative energy that creates matter, and it's highly, highly, highly compacted and charged and could, you know, be running all our automobiles and airplanes and heating all our homes if we were just a little bit, you know, if there weren't all these vested interests in pillaging the planet of oil and gasoline and minerals and all of that. Now, most channels have just kind of racked that up as, you know, the Anunnaki, you know, as government officials trying to keep the lid on our growth. I don't know if that's a useful way of looking at all anymore. But say, for instance, I took 4 electromagnets.
Right.
And I put them in an array in such a way that they were, there was a differential, and they were basically totally balanced with one another, like the energy fields were totally equal. Well, in the center of those 4 electromagnets would be a spot, a place where energy would arise of its own accord. Free energy would be there. So I'd say one day somebody's going to have an engine for a traveling vehicle that's like that, and it might even be that there are UFOs that use that way of creating free energy.
So that's the old, that's called sustainability, isn't it?
It's called sustainability for as long as you need to sustain it.
That's wonderful. I know there's so many people working with this zero-point energy right now.
Right. Well, it's become a little bit of a buzzword, and I don't think that many people really know what it is.
Now, that's why I got you to just give us a little thumbnail here.
Yeah.
Well, let's do my reading.
Okay, let's.
Okay, what do you want me to do? Pull a few cards?
I have to tell you folks,
these are beautiful, beautiful cards.
So I know, unless we can kind of telepathically transmit the images to people listening. But what I want you to do is to give me 5 numbers, and I'm going to say what they're for. So you give me a number for your higher mind or your wisdom between 1 and 78.
Okay, 23.
23, okay. And then I'll be able to describe the card a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's have a card that speaks about your heart wisdom and your inner child.
7.
Okay, that would be in the south of the reading.
Okay.
Let's have one for the east, which would be where you're being born.
Okay, 30.
30, okay. And let's have one for the west, which would be your present initiation right now.
47.
47. Okay. got it. It's interesting. And let's have one in the middle, which is the one that's balancing your four shields of self.
56.
56. Okay. Very good. So this will be fun. So where shall we start with you? Let's start with the East. And the East is your connection to your incarnation and what it's an energy of potential for you and where the sun is rising.
Okay.
So this particular card came down. It's at Barbary Castle.
Okay.
I was in this one. It's a flower of life, but a spinning one. It's an adapted flower of life, which I say is like looks like a poof. And the energy of the card, as number 30, is about repolarization, pendulum dowsing for truth, which is what you do with it as an intuitive, even if you're not using a pendulum to do that.
That's probably true, yes.
And it's spiraling to still point, which means using kinetic energy, dance, movement energy, spiraling around something 360 degrees until you can find the epicenter. So the oracle for card 30 goes, go ahead, spin like a dervish until you find your still point within. So it has to do with using bioenergy, whether that's Tai Chi or dervish spinning or contact improv, or just using your auric field in such a way until you can find the still point at the center of your heart.
Well, you know what I always teach is to spin in the a three-dimensional Star of David, in the double tetrahedron,
okay,
or the star
so you're
tetrahedron.
You're doing an adapted Merkava meditation then.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the East.
So that's perfect, right?
Okay, that is perfect. The West, which is your initiation right now, is about the show, because it's a crop circle that came down with an ET face. Holding what looks to be a CD disc, and it came down near a radio receiver set, like receiving signals at a place called Sparshold or Crabwood in Britain. And the message, when it was decoded, went like this: beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises, much pain but still time. Il Rijou, believe there is good out there. We oppose deception. Conduit closing. This was in a computer code that was solved by a man named Paul Viguet, who's crossed over. So it was a fascinating one, because it was a really stern-looking image of an ET. People thought maybe it's an Orion being. And the disc looks like it's a coded message from a friendly group. An Arcturian Pleiadian alliance, or Arcturian Syrian Pleiadian, whatever, saying, watch out for these other ETs that want to give you technology but may not have your best interests at heart. And that was a message there. So you're trying to sort out, looking at this phenomena, which is quite awesome, what is benevolent and what may have a subtle malevolence to them. And, of course, we live next to a country that, by some reports, the government in America did some reverse engineering of a UFO crash and made a deal with a group of beings that maybe weren't the most highly evolved, meaning that the military got zero-point energy and some technology from one UFO group, but they're not the ones that are putting the crop circles down for us. So this one, and this is a planetary initiation, it's not yours. We have to discern what is coming from love and what is coming from power that is evoking fear.
So that is back into using your intuition and your...
Yeah, using your moral and spiritual Geiger counter to resonate, to understand if something is a music and a food for your light body, or whether it's something that's interesting, but it's just titillating the mind, you know, or the ego.
Or indulgence.
Yeah. So then we'll go up into the north of your medicine wheel, which is the kind of reading I like to do with these, and we've got the Iqlitan Mandelbrot set, which was all about fractal geometry.
Mm.
And it's almost dedicated to Mandelbrot, who was a mathematician. Beautiful, beautiful one. And it has to do with the boundary between order and chaos. So the oracle reads, hover at the border crossing between order and chaos right now. Renew your passport. So this is about, we're in a kind of a chaotic field right now,
mm-hmm.
because the energy's been jumped.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that chaotic field should, by 2012, come a very beautiful music and a totally, and God willing, spirit willing, angels willing, and human beings choosing a new earth.
Hmm.
A Garden of Eden on this planet that is a fifth-dimensional Earth. So, but we're on the border crossing of it now, so it seems very, very complex.
And so be still right now. And
yeah,
what is it? Renew your passport. I thought that was kind of interesting.
You know, some esoterists or occultists talk about when you're having initiations, you have to know passwords to get through the border crossings dimensionally. So I was just kind of playing with that on the card.
Hmm. Joe sent me.
Yeah. So, and the seventh one was Eastfield, and this was one that I was in 1998. It came down on the 9th of July, and it was a seven-pointed star.
And what was its number?
Well, it's number seven,
hmm.
and it was the first heptagon, or the first seven-sided crop circle.
Hmm.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. Very, very beautiful energy. I stayed in it for over an hour, hour and a quarter.
What happened?
It was big, and I was exploring. It was a couple football fields big. So I wrote a kind of a childlike little mystical poem as opposed to doing an oracle. But the oracle basically is says that in your heart space, become very childlike and listen to the inner music of your soul. That would be the oracle for the inner child.
Hmm.
And I won't read you the whole of the poem, but it's 1 degree in another book that I've written called Aleph 2160, a Zodiac Oracle. So it's the 148th degree in that poem, because I wanted to create new Zodiac degree symbols
hmm.
for astrologers, because we need them. Astrologers are still working off of medieval negative grids about star meanings because, you know, some pope got knocked off when there was a particular star alignment. And we're just entering a new phase astrologically where the fixed stars are becoming way more important to us. So this particular degree of the zodiac that this circles about is connected to the star Regulus, which when I was born in 1950... was at about 28 and a half degrees of Leo by zodiacal longitude along the ecliptic. But as of the 21st of December, 2012, it is at 0 degrees of Virgo, which astrologically is the Sphinx, the lion and the woman together.
Hmm.
So, and one could say that Atlantis went under like 13,000 years ago, well, there is an energy underneath the Sphinx and the Giza Plateau and the Pyramid, which is called the Hall of Records.
Hmm.
So our deep understanding of the other half of the cycle of time of our 26,000-year orbit, and probably much, much, much deeper than that, is going to surface in 2012. And it'll break some... kind of breaks, not the right word, but it'll overthrow a lot of religious dogma on the planet.
And that's already shaking apart, isn't it?
It is. It's mm-hmm. already shaking, but mm-hmm. there'll be finally an archaeological find or a vibrational realignment that shifts things at that time. So, and the last card that you chose to center everything came down at a place called Milk Hill. You can look at it in your deck when the show's over. It's a Star of David. It's a Tree of Life snowflake. It came down in 1997 on the 8th of August. I call this card outer and inner infinity fractal, meaning you can go in to find infinity, you can go out to find infinity. It's called the Star of Genesis. And then I gave it a quaint little name, which goes, the web with no visible weaver, which is where we live. You know, we're, if you're a native person, you'd call the weaver Spider Woman, if you were Hopi. And the oracle for this card is your journey inward toward your crown of enlightenment will inevitably balance all the polarities tugging within you.
But you know what? Those sound like the passports right there, don't they?
Yeah, they are, sort of. Yeah. And then it goes further and it says, may beauty be your guide.
Yay.
So that's the Navajo blessing, basically. The Navajo are living, you know, when we're inside of a hexagon, it's a way of prayer for the natives. You basically honor each of the four directions, the north, the south, the east, and the west. Then you honor either the heaven or the earth energy, which would be, you know, say you honor the earth and then the heaven energy. So then you're dealing with, you know, the Tao, the earth, and the star energy. And then the mystical seventh point is the light that's kindled in you once you're in balance with all your relationships, all your relations, and the six directions around you. So that's the native way. It's a little different than, you know, meditating in a star tetrahedron, but it parallels it.
Well, that is a good centering tool.
Oh, definitely.
Well, so, these are really, that's a lot of information in these little cards, isn't it?
Yeah, and what I've decided in this early phase until you know, I'm totally overwhelmed with it, is that every single person that purchases an Oracle deck from my website or from me personally, I will do a little 10-15 minute reading with them to get them going.
Oh, wonderful.
Because in a certain sense, my guides requested that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, I look at what's out there with the various Oracle cards, and, you know, I've read tarot cards for 30-40 years and stuff, and it's not, it's usually being read by the ego to try and get a little bit more light in from the higher self, you know, to live a little bit more in the synchronicity web of life, you know? Whereas I believe, honestly, that the crop circles are the tarot for the fifth dimension. The tarot for the new age. They are a language of light and sound, and they are basically to tune the human instrument to the higher frequencies. So I know that people may struggle a little bit with the language of them because it's new. It's like learning a new language, but it's an ancient new language, just like the Hebrew alphabet is, that is coded to awaken soul memory.
Well, it seems to me that going and sitting in a crop circle is a lot easier than reading tons of books and trying to adjust all your thinking to that, eh?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I wouldn't be surprised that many of the people that are exploring crop circles on the internet or, you know, have the deck that I've put together will eventually get the calling to just go and experience the bioenergetic vibratory field in a circle.
Well, you made me want to do it. So give everybody your contact points, your website again.
Okay.
You've got more than one website.
Well, I've got a lot of websites tucked into the one.
Really. And also to tell people about your trips to Egypt and other tours.
Okay. So the website is simply www.treeoflifeschool.com. And there's no hyphen, so just treeoflifeschool.com. Once you get there, you'll find the Egypt Gallery, where there's a very extensive itinerary put up, and the next one that people could really go to would be next November. Though I will say, if there's a small group of four or five people and they want to go and they want to hire me as a guide, I will certainly do that.
Great.
As long as I'm not, you know, I can fit it in time-wise.
Great.
And there's about 10 books that I suggest reading if they want to, like, well, just one of the 10 to prepare themselves for Egypt. And there's some beautiful music, and I even put on it. At the very bottom of that, there's a chapter of a novel that's not published yet about Egypt.
Wonderful.
So I try to make the website very a learning tool.
Yay, you know? Sounds great.
And then if they want to come and study Kabbalah, I do that in the summer where I live in British Columbia. I'm overlooking Kootenay Lake, and I have a beautiful series of waterfalls on my property. So I do a 10-day Kabbalah school only once a year.
It's a magnificent part of the world.
It's beautiful, yes. And in the summer it's gorgeous. So that'll be in early July this year.
Great, okay.
And the crop circles are a little later on. It's like 24th of July to 8th of August, and I'm actually planning to go to Ireland for another 10 days after that.
Mm-hmm. Are there crop circles in Ireland?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But there's great stone circles there.
Wow, lots
and
of leprechauns.
Fabulous think music in Ireland. So, well worth going. And I've put some really, really lovely music on my website, so when people are browsing, they can have, they can feel the heart energies of some Hebrew chanting and prayers. And well, you live not so far away. There's a beautiful song about Merlin by Anne Mortifee that's behind the crop circle journey description, and I had a lot of fun doing it.
Wonderful. Now, tell me this: do you take any tours through dimensional places, like fifth, sixth, seventh dimension?
Well, I don't know that I've learned to do that, but within the Kabbalah, if you're doing Merkava meditation, yes.
Okay.
So if I'm doing a 10-day Kabbalah retreat, then I'm going to be taking people, they're going to be doing a Merkava meditation every day.
Well, Joseph Mark, I have so enjoyed this. You've given me more to think about than I can digest quite yet.
Okay.
But I'm going to continue digesting. And I thank you so much for joining us on Paradigm Shifters.
My pleasure. And just, you know, let people know that, you know, if they want a deck, they just have to go to the website and click on the Crop Circle Oracle card button. They can, you know, purchase it via PayPal. And then they should, as soon as I hear from them, then I will be in. Once they get the deck in their hands, I do a reading for them.
That's wonderful. And I really recommend it because these are just beautiful cards and there's such a lot of information in each card. I mean, you're not just going to get over these in a minute. You'll be able to be steeped in them, huh?
Yeah, it probably takes about 26,000 years.
Oh, okay. Well, we're collapsing that into 26 right
we're gonna,
now.
We're going to collapse it into, like, you know, 20 minutes of timeless time.
Can I sleep with them under my pillow and then I'll absorb it all?
Yes, that's possible. Be careful you don't bend the card too much.
That's right.
You better put it, you know, under a little something that presses it.
Anyway, we'll have to sign off and thank
okay.
you again. Perhaps you'll join us again.
Thanks so much, Veronica.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. That was our wonderful guest, Joseph Mark Cohen from Nelson, B.C. Boy, he took us on a crop circle tour, and I had no idea there were so many. And pyramids and the dimensions and Kabbalah. Oh, my gosh. We got lots to learn, you guys. So tune in on Thursday night, and we'll do our Merkaba meditation together, our sacred geometric meditations, and you can call in with your questions. I don't know what we'll talk about this Thursday, but I'm sure it'll be interesting and you can help decide. So that'll be 7 o'clock on bbsradio.com, wonderful BBS Radio at 8 o'clock. Join me with Jackie Salvitti and her wonderful channel team on ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, write to me if you've got any feedback, comments, questions, would like a session with me, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. Good night and much love.